Blog Talk Radio.
It's Wednesday afternoon, and we're excited to be on the air and hosted by Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for today are Robert Brining and Joshua. We'll be taking your calls and speaking out on the topic of the week. We encourage all of our listeners to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Pause I Am Radio. Happy Wednesday. I am your host, Robert Brining. And today, we actually had an interview guest lined up, Corey Montoya, who is an HIV-positive Apache activist. The only one that I've actually come across. So he had to reschedule today, so we will be putting him on at a later date, so I apologize. So today we'll actually be discussing life with HIV, how to deal with a diagnosis, and I'll share a little bit of my personal experience and what I went through when I was diagnosed in 2001. And we encourage, of course, all of the listeners to call in and share some of your experiences at 347-215-9442, or you can use the Skype click to talk. Some few announcements before we actually get started on the topic is I wanted to go over the chat rules. Please, no profanity, whether you're calling in or chatting, no soliciting, and it's a no-hate zone. We don't hate anybody, so just show some respect in the chat room. Some upcoming shows that we do have. This following Sunday, the 29th of March, we will have Eric B. from Designing Blind on A&E. He is HIV-positive interior designer who is blind, and I think it's pretty fascinating. He's prime example that there's no obstacle that you can't overcome in life, no matter how difficult your situation may be, and you feel like you're the only one out there and nobody can relate to you, you can still overcome that obstacle and fulfill your dreams, and that's very important. So that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to have him on. Plus, his story is just amazing. Next Wednesday, our big show, we have our new co-host, Jack McEnroth from Project Runway on Bravo, is going to be the new co-host, and he starts Wednesday, April 1st, and he'll be with us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. So I'm really stoked about that, to have somebody of his celebrity status, I guess we could say, want to be a part of this radio show. It means a lot to me that, you know, he obviously saw something in it that he wanted to be involved. So that's exciting, and I think that'll only bring more people to hear the radio show and to share some of their experiences, because that's what it's all about. After that, on the 5th of April, I will have Bob Bowers, the pirate, who is a mentor, a friend, and somebody who is amazing. And then I will finally, women, for the HIV-positive women out there that listen and who are a part of the positive community, I finally have a woman guest. Very hard. I reach out to females all the time trying to get them on so the women can have hope, because I give the men hope, you know, I think, with sharing stories and having interviews. But I wanted to give some women hope, because this disease does affect women. And straight women, you know, really don't hear a lot about it, and they feel they get lost in the muffle, especially on the positive community, because it's a lot of men and a lot of gay men. So they kind of get lost in the shuffle and limbo of trying to relate with everyone because, you know, their numbers are less. So I have a wonderful activist, Sherry Lewis, who is also known as Sherry Beachfront from the 80s band Get Wet, and she will be sitting in with me and Jack McEnroth on April 8th, which is two Wednesdays from today. She also does a podcast called Straight Girl in a Queer World, which obviously talks about her being a straight woman, living in... I believe she was with somebody and contracted it from a man who she thought was straight and was then sleeping with men. Hence, that's why she has it called that. So to touch base with that, they're the upcoming shows. A lot of people ask what this radio show is all about and where did it start. So I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that, since I'm kind of doing like a soft relaunch, since Jack will be coming to join us next Wednesday. So I just kind of want to explain, in case you're a first-time listener, what this is all about and how it came about. I myself was diagnosed with HIV in 2001, and when I wanted to reach out and find help, I didn't want to go to a support group where I sat in a circle and hi, my name is Bob, and I'm HIV positive. I didn't want to do that. I know there's a lot of help and hope there, but for me, it just wasn't the way that I liked to do it. So hence I went on to different websites and tried to reach out and find a social networking site for me, because at that time I was addicted to MySpace. And it was something that I was like, you know, there has to be something like this out there for people with HIV. That's when I came across some other sites, like B1 City is one that's a great, you know, friend of the POSIM community, but it's more of a dating site. And it seemed like a lot of these sites were dating sites, you know, where people are looking for love, or they were exclusively to all gay men. Or, you know, it was very not what I wanted. I wanted to be able to connect with everybody of all different, you know, sexual orientations and share experiences, because my story isn't just – people can't just relate to my story who are gay. Straight people can relate to the situation too because of certain steps that I took to get to where I'm at today. So with that, I would join these sites and create a profile and try to meet people who would, you know, give me hope that there was still life after this, because this was in 2007, because now, you know, 6 years have passed and I'm still not adjusting to the news of being diagnosed with HIV. And I didn't know where else to reach out. And these people would leave me comments, hey, sweetie, or hey, cutie, you know, and things like that. And I was just like, this isn't what I was looking for. I'm not looking to get picked up. You know what I mean? I'm in a relationship and I don't like people coming at me from all different angles when I'm there to find help and look for hope. And then that's when the light bulb went off in my head, and I was like, why don't I create a social networking site that doesn't, you know, feed to people hooking up? So that's when I created the POSIM community that can be found at POSIM.com. And it's just a social networking site for people infected and affected, and actually people who are even want to learn about HIV and AIDS, can join this site and create a community, and create a profile, I apologize. And from that, and when I started doing that, and I launched it in 2007 in October, I started doing more, you know, of advertising and reaching out. And when I started talking to these people who are joining the site and becoming members and were long-term survivors, I'm talking about people who have had it for over 20 years, and they're like, I wish this was around when I was diagnosed. And it just led me to think, like, has this been a problem that's been going on since AIDS has started, that there's never been a place where they can just go and find support and not feel the pressure of having to impress the person who's in the profile next to them? So I created it, and people started coming. And then I felt like I needed to do something more to have people keep coming back, because people aren't comfortable with their diagnosis, and they don't want to deal with these issues every single day. You know, and where on MySpace, you go on there and you it's everything, or Facebook, it's everything that you want it to be, but it's not one focus. But when people come here, they focus on HIV and AIDS, and some people like to put it on the back burner and just not even deal with it. They like to just let it sit there or ignore it. And for me, I had to put it out there so people would understand. So people would talk to me and say they didn't have a place, they wanted a place to call in and be able to voice out, because we were going to do a group chat. The group chat didn't go over so well. We were going to use Skype, so that's when I started the radio show. It allows me to talk to people, and it allows you to call in and share your experience. And if you have an experience that you want to call in and share with us, you can call me at 347-215-9442. So that's when I created the POSIM radio show. And I wanted to use it as a medium for the members of the POSIM community, but also the members of the HIV/AIDS community worldwide, to come and have a place where they can listen to people, real people with real stories who are living with HIV and AIDS. And you're not getting this, you know, touched up article or anything like that. This is, we're real, and it's live, and it's, nothing is planned. And it's all about just sharing our experiences with you so you can relate. And the big thing with me is, I always thought I could never relate to anybody. And a lot of people think that once they're diagnosed with HIV and AIDS, that they cannot relate and they will never find love. And by sharing stories, you know, all of the things that I think are different and nobody could relate to are all the things that everybody out there find as a similarity in me. I get emails from people saying that, you know, I went through drug abuse and drug addiction and I overcame it, and it's just kind of weird. Your story kind of is parallel to mine. And that's what it's all about, just finding a little bit of comfort and knowing that you're not the only one who did what you did to get here. And a lot of people view it as a big, you know, people make mistakes. I don't want to call me being diagnosed with HIV a mistake. I mean, obviously it was a mistake that I made or a bad judgment that I made, but everything, I believe everything happens for a reason. So, like, this was in my life path when I decided to come here, that I was going to live this and experience what's going on in my life so I could teach others. It wasn't, you know, right after my diagnosis that I decided I was going to become an advocate and start talking and sharing my story with everyone. It took me 5 years to adjust to it, because it was just like going to the doctors for me and getting blood. It was just a checkup. It wasn't serious to me because I haven't been on medication. So to me, it was just, like I said, a doctor checkup. I'd go, get blood, come home. It was just an appointment. It took me about 5 years, and then once I started to accept it, and I would read people's stories online, I would Google AIDS and Bob and HIV and AIDS, and that's when I discovered Bob Bowers. And in the same year that I launched Pause I Am, was the same year I became an ambassador for Hope's Voice, which is, you can check it out at hopesvoice.org. And we just had Todd Murray on, the executive director of Hope's Voice and co-founder, 2 weeks ago. And it just empowered me reading his story and finding that he was also 24. And the reason he shared his story and the reason that he does what he does is because his story isn't any different than most people who are his age or our age and dealing with HIV and AIDS. And the more that people share their story, and the more that people who are HIV positive stop feeling like it's something shameful and they should not be able to say that they're HIV positive, once we as a group and community of people with HIV stop criticizing ourselves for it, I think the world around us will. And it all starts with us, the people with a disease, who have to make that mind, you know, click that switch in your head and think that it's not something that you're supposed to be ashamed of. Because when we go around and we're ashamed to even tell people that we have HIV, how do you expect people to actually deal with the situation if you're not okay with the situation? And that's something that I've learned, you know, over the years of me being diagnosed, that it's all about me giving it to me, not about others. Because once you give it to you, other people are going to give it to you, but you have to show that you're okay with it and be confident that it's okay that I have HIV and your opinion really don't matter. You get different reactions from different people. And that's another thing that people talk about is disclosure on this site. It's a big issue in the AIDS community is when and how to disclose. And on a personal note, I believe that I should disclose, obviously, before any kind of sexual act, but I also think that it's my responsibility as the person who has HIV, as the person who is living with the virus, that I should be the one to tell you before it happens. Do I think that the people who are, you know, not HIV positive and indulging in sexual behavior with somebody who is has a responsibility? Yes, I do. But I think the greater responsibility is the person with the disease. That's just my opinion. You know, and I'm entitled to it, and I have HIV, so I can say that I feel that it's more my responsibility. Because you know what? If that person who contracted it to me told me and had that responsibility taken care of before the situation took place, I may not be where I'm standing at. So I totally 100% feel that it's somebody else's, you know, it's their responsibility to let you know that they are infected. And then, you know, you use a condom. That's what you do, or you don't. You know, go into those practices, or, you know, the person isn't interested. But things happen both ways. You have to get used to it. Some people are going to love you and accept you the same way you are, and that's okay. And some people, it's going to take some time to, you know, heal over some wounds. Because some people, especially like family and parents, they get a little bit of, I know my mom kind of went through it, a little bit of a withdrawal where, like, they were a little bit of ashamed, a little bit of embarrassed, but kind of really didn't know the whole thing and what it was all about. Because when I was diagnosed in 2001, I mean, even then things were different than what they were. You know, obviously when the disease first came out 25 years ago. But the point is that in 2001, it wasn't something that my mother went and looked into. You know, when my father was diagnosed with cancer, it was something that she went and obviously looked into because it was very lethal. And then again, I don't know, maybe my mom did go in and look at some stuff on HIV and AIDS. But we're in 2009 now, and things and medications have so become so much more available and they're making us live longer. And like, that's the point, is that we have to stress that this isn't something that you're going to, you know, you get and you die, unless you're diagnosed at late stages. And that's, you know, and that's why it's so important for us as young people, or as human beings who are sexually active, to go and get tested. Because if you get diagnosed and you're already at, you know, the last stages of AIDS, you know, there could be a possibility that you're not able to fight back and become undetectable with your meds. So that's why it's so important for you to go and get a test. And it's really not, you know, people, I think, don't get tested because they're afraid of the results. But if you take precautions and use condoms and don't share needles and things like that, you'll be able to deal with, you know, going to get an HIV AIDS test. I think it's the first test, you know, of going the very first time and getting that test done. It builds up all that fear and all that, like, oh my God, what if this happens? Because I remember it. I took the test a couple times beforehand, before I was actually diagnosed by my family doctor. I used to go to free clinics. And I would go and get tested, and the one time I did the oral test, and, you know, it came back that I was negative, and everything was cool. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, I went and took a blood test at my doctor's, and that's when it came back HIV positive, and I was blown away. And the way that I was told that I was HIV positive is something that I hope nobody else experiences, because the doctor just basically came into me. Now, this is a family doctor, somebody who I've gone to since I was a little kid. Whenever I had any kind of sickness or anything, this is a doctor that saw me. They knew my family. They were good friends with my parents. And I walked in there, and I was sitting in the waiting room. He walked in with his little clipboard, and he looks at me, and he goes, "Well, there's no other way for me to tell you, but you're HIV positive." And then he looked at the notes and looked at my numbers and said, "Well, your counts don't look like you're HIV positive. Let me check again." So then he went and checked and made me think, oh my God, what if this is not really true? Maybe I'm not HIV positive. So it kind of got my mind wandering. And then he came back and told me, no, that I was. That my counts were just very good, because they're not the normal counts of somebody with HIV and AIDS. And I don't know if he meant that and said those things to me because, one, he wasn't educated and he didn't know what counts were, or maybe he was just used to diagnosing people with HIV and AIDS who already progressed AIDS, and I was maybe just recently diagnosed and my numbers were great. I mean, to this point now, 8 years after being not diagnosed, almost 8 years, I now am not on any medications and my counts are good. And it's a little bit by choice and a little bit, you know, because my counts are good. If my counts were bad and it was like, the doctor is like, you have to, you know, you should really, really, really consider this because your counts are going bad, then I'll be more than happy to go on medication. I just don't want to go on it until I feel like I need to go on it. And, you know, that's everyone's opinion. And, of course, you want to consult your physician. It's very important that your, you know, your HIV specialist doctor is the one that you're going to confide in. And it's important because now I just found a doctor that is great and I love. And you should be interviewing your infectious disease doctors when you go and see these, or your specialists, because it's important when you go and see these people, they are the ones that you're kind of putting your life in their hands, so to speak. And that's something that I try not to do. I try not to give, I try not to make my doctor a god and everything that he says is 100% correct, because not everything that he says is going to be the way that I feel. And again, this disease is individual and it affects everyone individually. And of course, just because something works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you. So I just want to stress that. I'm not a doctor. I'm not some specialist. I'm just a normal person. I'm a real person, you know, who's living with it, who just wants to share what it's like. One of the things I wanted to touch on was after I was diagnosed, a lot of people, again, you know, they think this as a death sentence, and in reality, it's not a death sentence anymore. People are living, and they're thriving, they're reaching goals, and they're accomplishing so many life and living life happy and fulfilled with HIV for 25 years. And who knows? You know, I could be living for plus 25 years. Nobody knows. Nobody's really guaranteed tomorrow anyway, so that's why every day you should be living in the moment and cherishing the people around you, because you never know when their time is up. And it's just important to cherish those moments that you have, because when they're not here, you kind of reflect on it and a lot, and you think, well, couldn't I have done more? Couldn't I have done less? So having HIV doesn't mean that you have AIDS. And that's kind of, you know, one of the things that some people have a misconception about. A positive HIV test result only means that you've been infected with the virus. And having HIV does not mean you will feel the effects of the virus immediately, nor does it mean that you have AIDS. So you have to remember, just because you become HIV positive does not mean all of a sudden you're going to get sick tomorrow, or in a week you're going to get sick. That's not usually, if you're diagnosed early, that's usually not how it is. And a lot of people have a misconception about that. Without intervening HIV medicine, the average time between initial infection and the development of the symptoms associated with years is about 10 years. So, like I said, I was diagnosed in 2001. So they're saying in about 10 years, you know, is when I'll start feeling the effects. So that's 2011. So we'll see how that works in 2 years. I just hope that my immune system, you know, stays fighting and stays strong. It's very important. And you may not need HIV medicine for many years. And again, that's like me. Depending when you were infected with the virus and how your immune system has responded to it, you may not need medicine anytime soon. Perhaps not for some years. And again, that's like me. I haven't needed medicine. So again, knock on wood. Some people live for 15 or 20 years without medicine. So like that statement itself is just important, because people live 15 to 20 years without medicine, and in the early 90s, this was a death sentence. So if people are living for 15 to 20 years without the medicine, imagine how much longer they can live with medicine once they need it. It's really a ray of hope, and that's a really strong statement. And I think it's kind of important that people know that you can live a long time without it, without the medicine, and you can also live a long time with the medicine when it's time for you to take it. So I think it's phenomenal that is something that people need to know. And HIV medicine is good now and is getting better every year. And that's the best thing about it, is the untold story about all the different blood tests that are now available to help guide your medical decisions. Years ago, doctors made educated guesses about how to fight the virus. Today, new blood tests can describe with precision what kind of HIV is in your body and how well HIV medicine will work for you. Both the drugs and the tests are great resources for optimism. And that's all we really want, is optimism, a little hope that it's going to be okay. And after an HIV diagnosis, you can have an active and full life. You don't have to feel that your life has ended and now you have to start preparing for death. And that's not the way that it works. You can still achieve your dreams and your goals. And one of the quotes that we use on PosIM is, our dreams are not infected. And it's so powerful, because a lot of people stop dreaming after an HIV diagnosis because they feel that they cannot accomplish goals anymore, or they go into a state of depression that makes them think that life is over. And people are diagnosed and feel that their life is over, and they're going through those situations, and then maybe something wonderful will empower them. Maybe they'll have a baby. Maybe they'll fall in love. Things like that empower people to be like, life isn't over. I can still live a fulfilling dream. You know, I'm sure a lot of heterosexual women, once they have a baby, And the reason I'm saying I have Bob and Baby is because one of our members, Nick, is in the chat room, and it made me think of that. But once people have these awakenings or these aha moments, as I like to call it, they feel empowered to do something, and they're not afraid to be who they are. And I think it's wonderful that these people who have these moments and have babies and fulfill their dreams after a diagnosis come and share their story, because that's what gives others hope, and it's so important. And just to put it out there, if anyone out there is listening to this and would love to be a guest on the show or share some insight, you can email me at robert@pazim.com. I'm always looking to have, a different face of AIDS or a different face of HIV, even if you're affected by it and you would like to come on, or even if you want to learn about it, come on and ask me and one of my co-hosts questions. That's what this show is about. It's all about giving back to the people that are listening. And if you have something you would like to share, you can give me a call at 347-215-9442. And HIV should not stop you from pursuing your life that you wanted before your diagnosis. There are medical reasons why you can't be as active as you were before, and this includes pursuing – there are no medical reasons. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. There are no medical reasons that saying you can't be just as active. Like me, I used to play soccer when I was young, and I've been playing for over 20 years. And I stopped playing a little bit in high school and picked up a little bit when I was around 22 when I joined the gay soccer team. And I came out and I told everybody about my diagnosis, on my team. And it was such a fulfilling thing because I got nothing but love and support from them. And it didn't stop me from traveling to Denmark or traveling to San Francisco and playing in these soccer tournaments with these people, knowing that they knew that I was infected with HIV. And it just shouldn't stop you from doing these things. You can still travel to countries. You can still earn a college degree. You can still achieve success in your job or career. There are no medical reasons why you can't have a traditional family, find a spouse or partner, or pursue sexual relationships with other people. Just because you're HIV positive does not mean that you cannot have a sexual relationship with the person that you love or with another person. It doesn't mean that you cannot do that. You just have to be smart about it. Use a condom. Finding out your HIV status is the first step of taking control of your health. And that's why it's so important for people to know if they're infected or not. So get tested. Know your status. It's so important. Some statistics that I wanted to share with you is seeing the HIV community for what it is. Gender of people with HIV, about 74% of the people living with HIV in the world are male. 26% are female. But females make up about one quarter of all people newly diagnosed with HIV. That's why I want to get women on this. So females are seeing that there's hope out there and they're doing it. And it's a great thing. Age, when people tested positive, younger than 13 years old, less than 1% of people who tested positive were younger than 13. 13% were 13 to 24. 26% of the new people tested positive were 25 to 34. And then 35 to 44 is 34%. 45 to 54 is 19%. Older than 65 is 2%. So the chart shows that the age of people when they tested positive for HIV does not show the age when people get the virus. So this is when people are finding out that they're diagnosed. So some of these numbers could be off because they could have been infected 5 years before that and fall under a different bracket. The book that I'm reading from is called A Patient Expert Walks Through Everything You Need to Learn the First Year of HIV. The author is Brent Grodeck. It's G-R-O-D-E-C-K. And it's an amazing book, and it gives you just step-by-step of how to deal with things, and I think it's wonderful. Some facts on races and ethnicities about people with HIV. 49%, that's almost half, okay, of people living with HIV are African-American. Caucasian is 31, Latino is 18, Pacific Islander is 1%, and American Indian and Alaskan Native are less than 1%. So the majority of African-Americans who have had sexual contact with another male, the term down low, also known as DL, means to keep something private, whether that refers to information or behavior. A man on the down low is having sexual contact with another man but prefers to keep it secret. And these are, you know, obviously people who say they are straight and they are sleeping with men and not telling their wives and then coming home and sleeping with women. This says that it's a majority of the African Americans that are like that. But for me, I think it's everywhere. It's not just African Americans. It's also, you know, the white people and the Latinos and everyone, because it's so on the down low and so kept secret that you don't know about it. I just think maybe you hear about it more in the HIV, in the community of, you know, African Americans. I don't personally think that it's only in that majority of people. I think that it's all over and people don't seem to talk about it too much. When I was first diagnosed, emotions go everywhere. You got depression, anger, fear, and there's different things that I did myself to kind of deal with it. And obviously I was nervous as hell, but I did a lot of crying. And a lot of people think that weeping is for wimps. And guess what? If that's the truth, I'm a wimp. You know, I was scared. When I was first diagnosed, I didn't have the education. I went to a Catholic high school, and I was taught that I shouldn't have sex. Abstinence is the best way to go. And condoms were used, but they were not preferred by the Catholic Church, and it was kind of like killing a life, basically, if I was to use a condom and there was no conception, they were stopping the birth or whatever. It was just a load of crap, and that's why I wanted to get involved in this, because it's people like the Catholic Church, and it's people like those, and I don't ever want to say cynical, but those people who don't want to face reality and wake up. Where in 2009, the infection rates are skyrocketed. Almost half of all new infections are under the age of 25 years old. Like, wake up. It's not about doing what we feel is morally right, because you know what? What you feel morally right is not going to be what everybody feels morally right. And when people shove it down your throat, and then now, you know, I was forced to believe that being gay was a sin and I was going to go to hell and live with the devil and burn and all this other bull crap. And they're so far off, it's just ridiculous. And I don't mean to rant about it, but, it, you know, it just kills me that these people brainwashed me into thinking that I was doomed for this earth and I couldn't make a difference. And at age 29, I sit here HIV positive and I try to give hope to people. And now I can sit here and say that I believe I'm making a difference by putting it out there and giving people an open platform to speak their mind. And just that's why it's so important for people to go to school and talk. People like Hope's Voice, and they do a Does HIV Look Like Me campaign that I'm involved in that is videos. You can go to DoesHIVLookLikeMe.org, and they have ambassadors from all over, and they're going to be going to Brazil and I believe Thailand very, very soon to pick up ambassadors there in videos. But you go to DoesHIVLookLikeMe.org, and then they have ambassadors from all over. Go to the United States, and my video is under Bob. And you click on it, and you can watch my little two-minute video about why I do what I do and the importance of young people like myself to get up and share with our peers. Because these kids in schools, especially schools that are ran by religions, are not getting the right treatment and not getting the right, not treatment, the education. And they're going out into this world and they're having unsafe sex with strangers that they meet on MySpace or another internet space or things like that, or off a phone line or in a bar, and they're not using the proper precautions because they're not taught at a young age. And that's what is so important, to teach these kids that it's okay to have sex. It's going to happen. These kids are going to have it, whether you want them to have it or not. At age 15, 16, and 17, these kids are having sex. I don't care how great you think your kid is, and they're never going to do it. Kids get persuaded, peer pressure. Did you ever hear of it? It taught me a lot of things. I've dealt with a lot of peer pressure, and it got me involved in a lot of trouble in my personal life, and has made my life change the path that I was taking. But today, I don't project the peer pressure, and I try to help people who are dealing with the peer pressure of getting involved in all that. But by showing them the reality of it, by showing them the reality of drugs. Don't just tell your kids, don't do drugs, because that's not the answer. You can tell your kids, don't do drugs, say no to drugs. But at the end of the day, if your kids are around a bunch of his peers or her peers and they're doing drugs, more than likely your kid is going to do drugs too, because you're not teaching them what happens to them or what could happen to them if you do drugs. You know, I was taught you do drugs, you'll be in jail. You could, you know, and that would it. You could become addicted. And they never really showed me the real face of drugs. And I feel like these campaigns that go in there, whether it's an HIV positive campaign trying to raise awareness on AIDS to young people, or if it's a don't do drugs campaign, any kind of campaign, you have to give them real hard facts from the beginning to the end. You can't sugarcoat the crap, because when you sugarcoat the crap, that's where everybody gets lost in it, and that's where the cycle goes out of control and people are still getting infected and are still doing drugs. You have to give them a face of it. You have to show them pictures of what people look like when they're on drugs and what people look like when they get off of drugs. You know, do a before and after so people can have a visual idea of what this does to your body. Because just by saying it's going to kill you, that doesn't affect people, because people don't really think that marijuana is going to kill them. No, they don't think marijuana is going to kill them, and maybe marijuana won't kill them. But later on down the road, they're going to come across the option to try cocaine or meth or prescription drugs. And those things may kill them. You know, I was addicted to meth for about 3 years, and I was strongly, you know, using that in coke when I would go to the bars. And it's just amazing that I didn't think I looked as bad as I looked until I look at myself now and look at pictures from back then, and I'm like, wow. And that's what made me think that these people that are going there and teaching this stuff to people, they have to be very frank, so to speak, and very able to not be censored. When you invite somebody to come to your school, you should not tell them you cannot talk about having sex and you cannot talk about using condoms. You can only talk about abstinent only. Well, guess what? Abstinent only isn't working, and you can tell by the infection rate. So it's time to wake up. Just the other day, the Pope went to Africa, somewhere in Africa, I think it was South Africa, and was speaking to the people of the country, telling them that they should not be using condoms. They should be practicing abstinence, and it is the only forms of safe sex. And that's a load of crap to me. It really, really, really is. I cannot believe that you're going to go to a country and speak down to their people instead of trying to help them. Because you can wish all you want, you can close your eyes and wiggle your nose, but when you open your eyes up again, people are still going to be having sex. And that's why I just don't understand why people are so persistent on abstinent-only programs. Yes, abstinent works. And guess what? It works. I'll tell you, abstinent works. But the reality of the situation is people are having sex. People aren't remaining abstinent. So you have to now take a secondary precaution on how are these people who are having sex going to stop themselves from getting infected. And that's when condoms come in. That's when not sharing needles, if that's your thing. There should be more needle exchange programs out there. And when I was in school, I didn't hear about really too much of using heroin. It was just it was something you just were told you didn't do. And that's why it's so important for these people in schools to really get the education that they need. And this is why I want to go, and I want to speak to these kids in high schools who are getting the message that the only thing they can do is not have sex. Because I was a 17-year-old horny boy before, and I know what it's like to be in high school, and people are having sex. So it's just time to wake up, and I think it's very, very important that people realize that no matter how hard you wish and dream for something to go away, especially kids having sex, it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away. So as parents need to talk to their kids. I believe it all starts with the parents. Did I have an open forum with my parents about sex? Not really. Me and my dad really didn't talk too much about it. I was more kind of a mama's boy, so I kind of shed a little bit more with her about my when I would have sex for the first time. I told my mom. I know that's kind of weird, but that's just how I was. It was me and my mom was really close. So, but I never really got that. It was always, oh, well, make sure you wear a condom. Oh, well, make sure you wear a condom. That's great, but you still need to sit down and talk about the situation. You still need to tell them, this is why you need to wear a condom. You can't just say, oh, wear a condom. Make sure you're practicing safe sex. You need to sit down and tell them the reasons why they need to practice safe sex. What are the important reasons of why? Show them stories. Go online and pull up a website like One Cuff Pirate and be like, look, this is a guy that I found, Bob Bowers. He's living with this disease for, yes, he offers tons of hope to people, and he is a light at the end of the tunnel for many, many people. But there's still struggles that go through with life and with HIV, and this is something that they need to be aware about. He did this documentary called The Fire Within, and you can rent it on Netflix if you have Netflix, which we just discovered and we love. But if you look up The Fire Within, and it was done by, I can't think of the company, but it's called The Fire Within, and it's a documentary of him and his ex-wife going on the AIDS cycle in California. And it shows the real story behind HIV and AIDS, because you see his website and you see all the wonderful things he's doing and you get so inspired. But then this video also shows you that there's days when he's puking his guts up. There's days when he's living in the bathroom. And this is the reality of the situation that young people aren't seeing. They only see, oh, well, people are living longer with HIV, so it's really not something I need to worry about. So, you know, I'll just worry about wearing a condom. And, you know, people are living for 25 years, and it's okay now. It's not okay, because all these situations come with it. It's not just he's one person who has a purpose and is putting himself out there to help others, kind of like what we do here at Pause I Am. So there's good – there's a lot of good there, but there's a lot of bad that you need to worry about that comes with medications and side effects. And it's not always rainbows and Hershey Kisses. So you need to wake up, and that's the important things that need to be shown. I was on a show. I had a guy on this Sunday, Christopher Murray. He's a therapist and writer, and amazing guy, great interview. You can check that in the archives. And one of the ideas that we were discussing, because I find when I was first diagnosed, you know, in that doctor's office like I explained earlier, I wasn't even handed a pamphlet. But even if you're going to hand me a pamphlet, it's only a pamphlet with statistics. It's only a pamphlet with the basics, which is obviously very important. That's why they hand it out. But I don't want to hear medical mumbo-jumbo when I'm first diagnosed. I don't want to hear the percentages of people being infected and what my, you know, how long my life expectancy is of people with HIV. These aren't things that are what medications I should start looking at and what, like, I didn't want all that. I wanted somebody to relate to me. And the whole point of me bringing this up is we were just discussing, and I'm trying to reach out to Oprah because I think it's a great idea, and Christopher thought the same thing, is I want to create a book series. And I want to call it the Pause I Am Chronicles. And I want it to be a book series of about 20 books, we'll say. I'll start out with 5, I don't care. But 20 books, we'll say. And each book is a thin biography or story of some real person living in the world with HIV and AIDS. And each one could be of somebody of a different age and a different race. So if I go in there, they could hand me a young, you know, when I was diagnosed, a young gay man who was white. You know, his story in the book, you know, club thing. And I would be able to go home and able to actually feel like I could relate to somebody by reading somebody else's story who's going through it and is offered to give me hope. And then you could also have another one for, you know, the African-American women or the African-American man. And you can have, you know, one gay, one straight story. And there's all different things. You know, there's so many faces to this, and there could be so many stories. But I just think the concept of getting a real situation and somebody's real life story in your hands when you're first diagnosed and you feel shameful, you're full of fear, and you feel like your life is over and you're going to die, to give an inspirational story of somebody living their dreams and getting through the daily situation of living with HIV every day, I think it would be a phenomenal idea. And I think it would offer so much hope, and I think it would change the views of people who are newly diagnosed. And it would allow them to accept their status a little bit more, a little bit faster. And I think it would also make them feel comfortable and not shameful. And that's the most important thing. And that's why we do these things. And if you'd like to call in and share a little bit, we got 15 minutes left of the show. You can give me a call at 347-215-9442. I'd love to hear some experiences that maybe you have or you've heard. But I think that book idea would be really beneficial to a lot of people. And Oprah, if you're out there, give me a call. But I just have so many good ideas that come up, and I just try to think of all the different moments since being diagnosed with HIV when I needed something or I was looking for something and I couldn't find it. And it's important that when these young people or anyone who's newly diagnosed reaches out to find some sort of an answer or some sort of, whether it's an emotional answer or some sort of a connect with another human being who's going through the same situation, there should always be some sort of resource for that person. You know, when I reached out for stuff, it wasn't there, and I was left empty-handed, and I went back into my depression when I wasn't able to find the support and help that I needed and that I wanted so badly. And again, that's why I created PosIM for things like this, for moments like that in my life when I had no answers. And I didn't want the medical stuff. Just to touch base on what has been going on the community itself, as some people know, if you're a first-time listener, this is also a medium for the members of the PosIM community, which is a social networking site for people infected, affected, and want to learn about HIV and AIDS. So anyone listening live or in the chat room can go and check that out at PosIM.com. I also made the announcement earlier, and if you're coming in a little bit late, I'll let you know that my new Wednesday co-host starting next Wednesday, April 1st, is Jack McEnroe from Project Runway on Bravo. So I'm thrilled to have somebody, you know, of his status to come here and bring some more more hope, because he offers a lot, he's accomplished a lot, and he's somebody who people know. So it'll bring more attention, obviously, to the radio show, but it will also bring more listeners who are willing to share their stories with you. And that's why I want to do this. I want to invite, you know, these guests come on. A lot of people go, you have a lot of guests on. Well, I do that because these guests offer hope for other people. Their stories are what need to be told. And I want to give you as many faces of people with HIV and AIDS as possible, because it never looks the same. You know, people with HIV or AIDS do not look like this one individual. They come in all different sizes, shapes, and colors. And that's the great thing, and it's just like human beings. You know, we all come in all different sizes, shapes, and colors, and it's all about love. And someone just wrote something in the chat room. I looked into that. Thank you. So, you know, it's just important that people are not afraid. And again, it starts with us, the people with the disease. Stop thinking about it as something shameful and something, how do I want to put it, something you shouldn't be ashamed of your HIV status. I mean, I shout it from the rooftops, I say now. You know, I'm one of those people who, I don't give a crap. Now, maybe when I was first diagnosed or when I was in high school, I was a different person. You know, and I get a little antsy about whether I should post things on social networking sites like Facebook or MySpace, because people on there also know me from high school. But it's to the point where I don't give a crap about, you know, what people think anymore. Because today I am me, and I am proud, and I am comfortable, and I know that I am out making a difference in other people's lives, and that's more than what a lot of people do. You know, a lot of people tend to be selfish with certain aspects, and they like to keep everything to themselves. So for me, I just like to offer y'all hope. That's what the whole entire concept of my life and the radio show the Positam community is just to give you a wonderful place to come and connect, because you share stories, you discover similarities, you form bonds, and then you make these wonderful friendships with people from around the world. I mean, I got members from all over the world on PosIM, which is great because these people wouldn't have any other resources. You know, they find my website and then they come on. I mean, they're from Kenya, the United Kingdom. Obviously, they're from Canada and Mexico. But, I mean, we got Puerto Rico. I think I have Iran. I mean, it's just amazing that these people find my site. And to me, it's so funny because I'm just this little guy who makes this website trying to make a difference, and all these people are connecting and forming friendships, and it's a wonderful thing for me to see. And I think one of the greatest things about it is when you join the site, you're not just a number. You're not just member number 213, you know? You become my friend, and that's the purpose of it. And that's what's so important, and what sets it aside is you're not just a number to somebody who's running a website. You become Robert's friend, me. You know, I reach out to you, I leave you comments, I talk to you, and, you know, some people respond and they love it, and that's one of the things that people said, I'm not just a number on your site, and that's what I love. You know, I feel like you are really here to meet with everyone, because I talk to everybody when they come on, but not everybody's going to, you know, log into the site all the time. Some people don't log into the site maybe when they're at work because of the name of the site, and that's understandable. Some people don't like to deal with the situation every day either. Some people won't make a profile and have it signed up in 3 months or signed back on in 3 months. But that's okay, because when the time comes and they're not feeling well and they're feeling depressed and they feel like they can't take it anymore, they can now log on, because they'll remember, what about that website I made that profile on? Because I send out emails to people every once in a while, just say, hey, don't forget we're here, or join this group, because we do different groups on there. You know, we have groups for people not – you know, people trying to quit smoking. We have long-term survivors. I mean, we got all different things, spiritual ways to deal with HIV, medical marijuana, all different things like that, so people can find where they can relate to other people. And I think that's the best part is if you don't want to share your story and you don't want to post your picture on your profile page, you can still join one of our probably 45 groups that we actually have on PosIM. And you can find somebody who has the same interest as you, and you can start there. I mean, we have pet lovers. We have people who are artists who work in retail. We have one for every different state, you know, and if there's not one there for your state, you can create one. It gives you the ability to make a group for anything that you want. So somebody created one for dancing. They like to dance. So we have a POS dance group. You know, we have POS poetry group. There's so many things that cowboys and pirates, we have parents, POS and sober. There's so many things where you can find different parts of other people and find something that you can relate it. And I think that's like what's so great about, I mean, my website is that it gives you a place to find comfort and people to relate to. So we're winding down to about the last 6 minutes. I just wanted to thank everybody for tuning in, and remember, next week we will have my new co-host, Jack McEnroe, and I'm really excited about that. Sherry Lewis will be up in 2 weeks from today. We will have Corey Montoya, who was supposed to be my guest today, who had to reschedule. We will have him back on probably either in April or May. So I'm definitely interested in learning more about him, because I want to get what it's like for the Native American people who have HIV and what they go through. And one of the things that I learned through going through some of his story, because he had an article written on him in March of 2008, he was featured on the cover of POS magazine. And one of the things that I read about him, which is just so, I didn't know actually, that the highest infection rate in regards to races, African Americans have the highest, Latino has the second highest, and then Native Americans have the third. But most of those people who are Native American who are getting these, who are becoming diagnosed with HIV and AIDS, they're getting diagnosed late and they're already full-blown AIDS because it's not taught. And one of the great things about Corey, and this is why I wanted to have him on, is that he travels, you know, the New Mexico and where he's at, he travels to reservations and to substance abuse centers and schools to tell his story to these young people. And there are 25 tribes in New Mexico of Native Americans, and 19 of those tribes do not get education about HIV and AIDS, and that's what he does, and that's why he's the driving force behind what he is, because there was no voice for Native Americans when he was diagnosed, and he became the voice, and that's why he was such a great guest for me to have on, but he'll be on later. But he was empowered because there was no answer for him. When people come to look for an answer and they don't have one, you create the answer, and it's like the quote goes, be the change you want to see in the world. If you can't find what you're looking for, become what you're looking for so other people can find it when they look for it. I hope you all had a great day. I want to leave you all with one last quote that I found in a book called You Are Not Your Illness. And it kind of is profound. I thank you all for tuning in. And remember, I'll be here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with my new co-host. And on Sundays, because we also air the show on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where I co-host with Jeremy Dunn of PositivelySpeaking.com. The quote that I wanted to mention for you is this. Life can be understood backwards. It must be lived forward. So with that, folks, have a great afternoon. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and I hope to see you all Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I will be interviewing Eric B. from Designing Blind on A&E. Have a great day.
Spanish, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo,
Galileo,
Galileo, I'm just a poor boy and nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this one.